Today, I am speaking with Arun Khatan, who is the UK Nuclear Institute Young Generation Network's project lead for COP26 and an engineer at Magnox Limited. Welcome, Arun.
Thanks very much for having me.
So could we start out with you just sharing a little bit about your educational background and professional history and what made you want to pursue a career in nuclear energy to begin with?
Yeah, sure. So I studied chemical engineering at university, actually, and was always interested in energy mixes. And before that, kind of interested more in chemistry, and was fooled a little bit by going into chemical engineering, thinking it would be a lot about chemistry, but it's much more about physical processes. But I quickly learned that I loved actually learning about that. And I remember being obsessed with clean energy technologies. I think my friends jokingly gifted me a t-shirt with a wind turbine on it because I would always be banging on about that. So yeah, I was really interested in that. I wanted to get into modeling wind turbines and getting clean energy tech off the shelf and into the real world. And then right at the end in my fourth year, we did a module on nuclear energy and I was fascinated by it. Went away, did loads of research, realized that fusion energy was this incredible power source and we needed to be throwing the kitchen sink at it and more with lots of money and getting it built. So I decided to do a master's in nuclear engineering. And then in the first week, I was obsessed with fusion energy, but in the first week I learned that fission already does everything we think we need fusion to do. It's already a clean energy. The wastes are incredibly small, produced abundant green energy, and we just maybe need to focus on that and getting that built on a larger scale. So it's kind of where my passions got me into nuclear and helped me realize that nuclear is incredibly clean and incredible technology. That's a gift, really.
Great. And it sounds like you have chosen to pursue a professional career and a lot of volunteering related to nuclear energy. So on that note, you currently volunteer at the UK Nuclear Institute's Young Generation Network as the project lead for COP26. Could you describe the work of the Nuclear Institute and how the Young Generation Network fits into the broader mission?
Yeah, so the Nuclear Institute is the professional membership body for the UK nuclear industry. So you can get chartered, you can get chartership status with the Nuclear Institute. They provide lots of kind of development opportunities, and the Young Generation Network is, if you're under 37, you're automatically a member of the Young Generation Network. So it's really excellent at helping introduce new starters and young people into the industry, providing intro to events. I learned a lot when I kind of first started in the industry, and yeah, it's a really welcoming, friendly space with lots of passionate young people who are like incredible at what they do. And a big credit to our chair, Hannah, and I think there's been 20 plus years of the YGN in the UK. So really strong establishment and yeah, beginning to look at bigger and better things every day now. So it's quite exciting.
Nice. Yeah, I was on their website recently and it's just like a maze of all the different YGN committees and responsibilities that everyone has. It seems like a pretty big organization.
Yeah, I think the website probably needs updating and simplifying with what is the reality of it. So yeah, loads of good things going on. And a lot of the board of trustees have quite high ranking positions working with government and innovation research programs and the National Nuclear Lab. So it's really well embedded for the industry to kind of, yeah, we're at this kind of point now where we can really take off into the clean energy space. So I think really good things are starting to happen.
Yeah, that's great. And so you specifically work on something called the Net Zero Needs Nuclear Campaign. And it seems like you've had a lot of actions leading up to COP26 this November. You released a Nuclear for Climate position paper in coordination with other nuclear organizations, not only in the UK, but across Europe, Japan, and North America. You have a petition going to encourage negotiators and policymakers to take a scientific and technology neutral approach at COP26. Can you elaborate a little bit on the recommendations of that policy paper you released? Talk a little bit about the campaign as well as the international partners that you've worked with to make the report possible.
Yeah, I think we've been in a really fortunate position that COP is coming to the UK, so we've had the opportunity to pick up some of the local actions through the European Nuclear Society. So those international nuclear organizations have this accredited status at COP with the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, the UNFCCC, probably the longest acronym I know. And it's really, yeah, we're really fortunate we've got that opportunity through them. But when COP was postponed for a year, we saw it as a bit of a disappointment because a lot needs to happen. But also, the silver lining was we could take a lot of actions, and we put together an international team. We've got people from Canada, Brazil, and especially all over the UK, including Glasgow, where COP's going to be held. And it's just been great because we've set up this Net Zero Needs Nuclear campaign. We've been working with Nuclear for Climate, who is made up of volunteers as well, and those international nuclear associations. And we published our Net Zero Needs Nuclear position paper. And really, yeah, it's kind of a meta, it just kind of accumulates references from international bodies that underpin why we need why we need nuclear for net zero. And yeah, there's not really any hard science in it, but it kind of accumulates those different areas. So IPCC reports, WHO reports, World Health Organization, the International Energy Agency, as well as the IAEA and various others. And essentially, it very clearly lays out why we need nuclear. And there's 5 points on everything from it being low cost and affordable to being proven to get your emissions down rapidly, low cost, and it really promotes sustainable global development as well, which is another huge part of things we don't necessarily talk about. We can't be reducing our emissions globally and expecting humanity to flourish and have a prosperous future. So our recommendations coming out of that is recognize these points, put nuclear on the same footing as renewables, and just talk about it normally, just have it at the table and have it ha make sure it has access to financing and that it's included in policy, and stop the bias against it because there's no real scientific reason for that.
And I'm just curious. So I think when a lot of people who maybe work outside of energy or energy policy, when they hear about reducing emissions, they immediately think of the power sector. But can nuclear, what's your opinion on nuclear playing a role in reducing emissions outside the power sector?
I think it's got a huge role, probably one of the biggest roles. We're really fortunate that nuclear produces high temperature heat, or it can produce high temperature heat if we want to. Renewables have their part to play in decarbonizing the power sector, but in producing heat from electricity that renewables produce, there's a lot of efficiency losses, and it doesn't really make sense to necessarily do that. It can do that, and it probably will do that because renewables are such low cost. But there's a lot of land benefits and space requirements that you can begin to achieve benefits from by using nuclear. So the high temperature heat you can use for desalination, which is becoming a bigger and bigger issue worldwide. You can use it for steel production, you can produce hydrogen for it. The in industrial uses of high temperature process heat are increasing, so that's where nuclear can really begin to step in. The other kind of alternatives are things like biofuel and carbon capture and storage, but there is a big issue there that they still create a lot of kind of particulates in the air. If they aren't captured correctly, there's a lot of potential health benefits and downsides that you just don't get with nuclear. So to me, it's a little bit of a no-brainer that we should be using nuclear for all these high temperature applications and completely rid ourselves of fossil fuels.
Okay, great. Thank you. And sort of continuing on the conversation about net zero, I think a lot of us have seen the report that was released by the International Energy Agency recently, and it lays out a roadmap for achieving net zero carbon emissions by 2050. And nuclear is mentioned a number of times in the report. It says that nuclear provides an essential foundation for transitions and plays a role in clean electricity generation even beyond 2050, albeit alongside a much higher percentage of wind and solar. So, in your opinion, what were some of the most important takeaways from this report, and how do you see some of these scenarios playing out over the next 30 years?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I was really pleased to see that the IEA had a very similar kind of output to what the IPCC said in their 2018 report that limits the pathways that limit global warming to 1.5 degrees. And their median pathway, the IPCC said that nuclear needs to at least double in energy, primary energy production by 2050. And that's quite consistent with what the IEA have said now in this most recent net zero pathway. So in their projection, nuclear doubles to 2050. But I think that's almost the baseline. It needs to at least double if we're going to have a low cost pathway. And that was a really important part, because we always hear that nuclear is too expensive, but it's always included in the low cost models. It provides so much stability to our grids that it's almost fundamental. And if you're not using nuclear, you essentially have to use fossil fuels. And the clear winner is nuclear there.
Yeah, I think it was interesting in that IEA report, even beyond 2050, I think it said there should be a 70%, 30% division between, you know, traditional renewables and nuclear. But I think what's easy to forget is that there is going to be such an increase in need for electricity. So that still, that doesn't mean ramping down nuclear. It's a substantial increase even as wind and solar are ramping up as well.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So back to COP26, which is what you've been focusing on for a number of months now. I assume you're going to be attending in Glasgow this November.
COVID allowing.
Okay, good. So what outcomes do you hope to see at the conference, both generally speaking on energy and climate policy, and more specifically on nuclear?
Yeah, so I think the UK government's been doing some really good diplomacy work to get as many countries engaged. A lot of the time it's about the NDCs, so the nationally determined contributions, making sure those are in line with net zero targets, getting countries to commit to net zero at the very first point. So yeah, loads of good progress on that front. But I think it is a challenge, similar to how it was a challenge at Paris for everybody to agree to 1.5 degrees. And we're seeing this kind of, let's agree to a target. Okay, everybody signed up. And then the next step is, okay, how are we actually going to do this? And what are the time bound steps to that? So that's kind of what we're seeing now. And one of the big, big things now is, how do we get rid of our reliance on coal? So I see all of these COPs are quite iterative, and they build on each other. So there's the big Powering Past Coal Alliance and a big push even in the IEA net zero report to say we don't need to be funding new fossil fuel powered plants anymore. It's just not needed. So okay, that's great. But I think this is where nuclear comes in. We can provide the solution that we can be directly replacing coal power plants and fossil fuel powered plants. They kind of produce this baseload online all the time kind of approach with no emissions. So I think, yeah, that's the first step, getting countries to commit, have really ambitious nationally determined contributions saying what their emissions will be and starting to plot out these pathways to net zero by 2050 at the latest. And then I think this is where nuclear really comes in. We can act as that solution. We can provide that solution. And when you're providing that holistic image and saying, okay, we already have this incredible technology that helps us get there, it helps underpin those decisions a bit more. So that's what we're trying to do. Get nuclear on the table along with renewables to show what it can give.
Great. And you already answered this question a little bit, but I want to ask specifically about the UK since they're leading COP this year, and that's the country that you live and work in. So the UK recently set a really ambitious target of 78% cut in emissions compared to 1990 levels by 2035. Could you just elaborate a little bit on what role you think nuclear will play in helping the UK specifically meet those goals by 2035?
Yeah, the UK is quite an interesting market when it comes to nuclear. We've got, I think, a number of advanced gas cooled reactors that are online at the moment, and a lot of them are due to come offline in the next 5 to 10 years, so up to 2030. Hinkley Point C is being built at the moment, and that will come online about 2026, I think, and that will start to make up the lost generation. And if Sizewell C gets built, those two new power plants, huge power plants will make up for the lost generation from the AGRs. So with these two new builds, with Sizewell C not yet agreed, if that can get agreed and started to get built, we'll be back at where we are today, which is, yeah, with a bit more planning, we would have been in a better position. But once we can get there, there's the UK SMR, which is kind of going through a lot of the regulation and funding aspects. And that's where I think we can start to build on top of our building on top of our targets. So on top of what the current generation is, how much can we decarbonize? And I think the climate change committee, or the Committee on Climate Change that we have, which is an independent body that advises government, they've recognized the need for about 40%, I think it's 30 to 40% of firm power. And that's, essentially nuclear, but it can be anything from carbon capture and storage, if that works out. Which is also, having spoken to a few IPCC authors, one of the hardest things to do technology-wise, carbon capture and storage. So it hasn't been demonstrated at scale yet, whereas we have at scale nuclear. Again, one of my many frustrations, that why don't we just invest in what we've already got? So hopefully lots more nuclear in the UK from a combination of light water reactors, large and small scale.
Great. Yeah. So despite setbacks, it sounds like you're very optimistic about the role of nuclear in the UK's future and just more broadly across the world.
Yeah, I'm an optimist at heart, so I might be disappointed, but yeah, cautiously optimistic.
I think that's the best way to be. All right. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me. It was great hearing your thoughts about COP26 and everything else.
Thanks for having me. It's great to chat.